However, my aunt was most insistent he be rescued. Not for any sentimental reason, mark you. No, my aunt vowed that anyone held for a prolonged period in such a den of iniquity would come out more hardened in vice than when he'd entered. The Fleet was a free and easy establishment. Almost anything could be had in return for coin or a favour in kind. In debtor's prison, one must turn to connivance and double-dealing to thrive. My aunt feared my brother would learn that lesson all too well. I saw the force of this argument. Our fortunes were, after all, wholly dependent upon Selby's until such time as I married. I had my own reasons for going to London. I overcame my aunt's objections to this proposal by steadfastly refusing to hand over the requisite funds so that Mr. Matheson, my brother's land agent, might travel to town and repay the debt. My aunt, disapproving but defeated, said it was as well my maid, Jane, was a sensible woman. And indeed, Jane had cared for me since birth, first as nurse and later as my personal attendant. If we met with accident or trouble, Aunt instructed us to apply to her brother in Albemarle Street for assistance. Without further argument, Jane and I boarded the mail coach for London. I discovered Selby more or less comfortably ensconced in rooms outside the prison itself. If one had the means to pay, all manner of things might be secured for the comfort of a young gentleman in my brother's predicament. For a fee, one could live under the prison's regulations in lodgings within a designated radius of the prison. Living under the rules was a luxury Selby could ill afford, however. Hence his appeal to his family. Selby was dicing with his manservant when I presented myself at his door. He sprang up, his expression lightening at the sight of me. I marvelled at this unwanted show of enthusiasm. He must be suffering from his incarceration more than I'd supposed. Selby's athletic frame was not visibly the worse for his imprisonment. He wore no wig, but his dark hair was curled and tied back in a queue, his jaw close-shaven, and his linen well-laundered, if recklessly arranged. "How gratifying to see you well and in spirits, brother," I said. Selby's welcoming expression turned to a scowl as the implications of my presence must have dawned. "What are you doing here? My instructions were to send Matheson." I nodded to our servants to leave us. When the door had closed behind them, I said, "You should know me better than that. I do not trust anyone with my money but me." "Unseemly wench," my brother muttered. He held out his hand in a peremptory gesture, but I forestalled him. "What? Did you think I'd bring my savings here and risk being robbed?" I lied. In my satchel was a bank draft representing the proceeds from pawning my mother's pearls, but if Selby had known that, he'd have wrested the draft from me by force. "My assistance," said I, "comes with two conditions." Selby's face twisted and his hand clenched into a fist. "You little—" I raised my voice to speak over him. "First, I wish to know who could have had the temerity to lock you up like this. Surely no ordinary tradesman would have done such a thing." His mouth bunched with reluctance, but he bit out the words. "Not that it is any of your business, but it was Leveson, the coachmaker." I blinked. "He must be a very brave soul to risk offending you in such a manner." Selby rubbed the side of his nose. Was it actually possible that he looked abashed? "Boots on the other foot, actually. I seduced his wife." "Selby!" Now I understood. Mr. Leveson was of the respectable merchant class, and as such it was a heinous thing indeed for Selby to trifle with his wife. All the more reprehensible because, in the ordinary course of things, a coachmaker would not dare challenge a lord. Well done, Mr. Leveson, I thought, but I kept that sentiment to myself. "Don't moralize," Selby paced about the room, bristling with impatience. "I can't."